teaching the people and proclaiming in Jesus the resurrection from the dead. This is Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon.
The martyrdom of Stephen is what is before us today from Acts chapter 7, and we are going to look at this very interesting section of Scripture. The Holy Spirit gave us the longest sermon in the book of Acts regarding Stephen and his preaching before he was stoned to death. There's a great message for us today. I've titled the message, "The Witness of Stephen for the Church Today." You feel like the church is under attack? You feel like Christianity is under attack? It seems like everything is being turned on its head, and now the exclusive message and claims of Jesus is the most hated message in the world. We're going to look at how this passage helps us through that great challenge in our day from Acts chapter 6 and 7. Thanks today for tuning in to Abounding Grace Radio. Please visit us on the web at aegradio.org, aegradio.org. The number's 888-504-8805, 888-504-8805. Please find us on Facebook, and all of these messages are there on our new website, www.agradio.org, free for download. You can also support us there. 100% of your support goes to continue to bring Abounding Grace Radio to you. There's a PayPal link. We're always grateful as you help us to take the gospel even into Africa. Think of that great opportunity we have to take the gospel to the continent of Africa. Abounding Grace Radio airs there. So thank you for helping us to do this. Here is now the message, Acts chapter 6 and 7, the witness of Stephen for the church today. This is part one. Thanks for tuning in today to Abounding Grace Radio.
Jesus said in John's gospel, "If the world hates you, understand that it hated me before it hated you. If you were of the world would love you as its own. However, because you are not of the world, but I have chosen you out of it," which is where Stephen goes right now, out of it in this passage. "The world hates you. I have told you these things ahead of time to keep you from stumbling." That seems to be so important to me. He goes on to say, "They will ban you from the synagogues. In fact, the time is coming when anyone who kills you will think he's offering a service to God." Is there a better passage to demonstrate that than this? "They will do these things because they have not known the Father or me. But I have told you these things so that when their time comes, you may remember that I told you." This is going to come. Now, as I read that and thought about this, the single great purpose then, the purpose of this story, that none of what was happening in the world and what is happening in the world today should surprise us. It really shouldn't. Anything that they do to us along the course of the way should not surprise us. It should not faze us. For Jesus just told us that not only would it be like this, but that he's chosen us out of the world. And they hated him. If they hated him, they're going to hate us. If they don't hate us, we're not looking much like him. So that's the tie here. I think we look at this narrative and we think, oh, how awful. How awful. What an awful story. We have to get through this particular one in Acts. They martyred Stephen. And I paused and I thought, that's not how the narrative is presented to us. The narrative is presented to us and comes to us in a message of victory and a message of judgment, but not upon us. There's a twofold message in it. Stephen gained everything. To live is Christ and to die is gain. Jerusalem lost everything. In fact, you'll see that in the next chapter. This was the catalyst for their judgment to come full circle. This was a real loss for Jerusalem. They had killed a prophet. A prophet had been among them. So much so that Hebrews looks at all of these kind of events and says the world was not worthy of these men. The world was not worthy of these men and their message. The event sealed the judgment on Jerusalem, and from this point in Acts now, it goes out to the ends of the earth. So Stephen was the catalyst. Stephen was the figure to accomplish that. That's victory. We'll see in a minute how that comes to pass. But with this in mind, the Lord desires to say to us something very helpful to the church today. In the midst of all the change and all the problems, be faithful in your calling in the witness as a church, no matter what the world is saying and doing to you. Don't let them intimidate you. Now, that's a much easier thing to say and a much more difficult thing to live. Don't let the world scare you. Stop it. Did Stephen seem scared at all in this narrative? Don't let the world scare you, no matter how bad it gets. And that's what I want to keep in front of us, because I think that's what Jesus is saying. You should expect this. In light of the changing times and the things, what is the witness of Stephen for the church today? This speaks to us so powerfully. Let's look at this thing. As you break down this long narrative, there really is a simple breakdown that you have an accusation made against Stephen, the response that he gives in surveying redemptive history, and the martyrdom that then follows. In the last section, you remember there was an introduction of deacons. And I want to encourage the deacons. The first martyr was a deacon. Okay? That's important. The Magnificent Seven, remember that? The Lord has his eye on these guys. In fact, the ministry of the apostles is somewhat fading, and now we're looking at, and I realize this is an early form of the office. There's some discussion of whether it looks like the diaconate today. It is the early form of the office of servant. But that we have now the focus in Acts on Stephen and Philip for a significant portion of the book. As we continue chapter 6, we see that Stephen had been given a peculiar wisdom and knowledge and understanding by the Spirit of God. He was full of grace and power. Love that. Grace. His preaching was full of grace and power as he reasoned and proclaimed, performing great wonders and signs among the people. But it was his message that was causing problems. It was his message. You'll notice that some of the members of the Freedmen's Synagogue, isn't that an interesting irony that is put here? The Freedmen. These were slaves that had been freed from Roman oppression and now were leading and teachers and involved in the synagogue, in this particular synagogue of which Saul was a member. So Saul listens to Stephen's sermon. This was his synagogue, as history tells us. A strange irony, isn't it? Slaves that had been set free from Roman oppression, and look at the bondage that they're in. They made two basic charges against Stephen. Two basic charges. The charges were so serious, we read, that they arrested him and dragged him off for trial at the Sanhedrin, which if you were to compare the two trials of Jesus and Stephen, it is almost one-for-one correspondence to things that happen. False witnesses, all that. Charges, the same. They charge him here for blasphemy, speaking against God and speaking against Moses. That's the charge. They said he speaks against the holy place, which in their ears was equivalent to blaspheming God because God's location was associated in the holy place. You see, it was a one for one there that they heard him speak against the temple and said, then he speaks against God and blasphemes him. And he speaks against the law of God. He is an antinomian. He hates the law. He's trying to change the law. This guy. We heard him speak against the law of Moses, and he wants to change all our traditions, this guy. He said, Jesus will destroy this place and change the customs that Moses handed to us. I want you to notice that this wasn't anymore just the leaders now. You ever notice how things move in societies that it goes from a ruling elite that pushes views on people, and all of a sudden, over time, it overtakes the whole people. That's what's happened here. We have now moved in Acts to the whole of the people now have been riled up and taken against this new sect which they call Christians. We have a mob against Stephen in Jerusalem. All the people are involved in it. But the charges are interesting. What made them so mad? What in the world made them this mad? What was he saying? What was Stephen doing? Well, I think we've learned a lot from the book of Acts so far, that what the apostles were doing is that they were out showing from the scriptures the things concerning Jesus in all of the scriptures. This was their whole model of ministry. The things that Jesus taught them concerning himself, remember on the road to Emmaus when in the first sermon after the resurrection, he started doing from all the scriptures. And the church was booming this way. Acts has been showing us the apostolic ministry and the coming of the Spirit at Pentecost. Pentecost, as we looked at, was all about the preaching of Jesus. The Spirit was given so that people would preach Jesus correctly. Acts has been breaking down, if you follow the whole structure of the book of Acts, it's been showing us sermon after sermon after sermon that's doing this. What did we just read? The truths of the Old Testament as fulfilled by Jesus. And the church boomed this way. It just boomed this way. But it also caused problems this way. What did Jesus say about the temple? Well, you'll remember in John 2, he got in a lot of trouble and heat among all the religious leaders for saying, "Destroy this temple and I will raise it up in 3 days." And he was talking about what, boys and girls? His body. What did Jesus say about the law? "I didn't come to destroy, but I did come to fulfill it." What did that mean? Now, why did all this matter? Well, what was the tendency? And I think this helps in the way that Jesus talked about what these people would face in moments like this of great pressure. What do we feel when we are pressured in our day with so much opposition to what we do? Change the message. So, well, we wouldn't do that. Really? Does this speak to us today? Can you see what's happening right now when we look at, last time we're not ignorant of Satan's devices, look at what's happened in our world for just a moment and look through that lens for a minute, and then you can see exactly that Stephen was facing something quite similar. Many people are consumed right now by the state of the world, aren't they? Consumed by it. This is why I can't stand social media now. It's like we have all these super pastors who are just chomping at the bit to write articles for their names just to solve all the problems of the world. It's all it's become now. All distracted. You've seen the vicious push in our society to not just silence any speech that offends, but to silence anything that would assault what they think is a free lifestyle. Synagogue of the Freedmen. Free lifestyle. We're in a synagogue of the Freedmen. But they have their own rules. Now, you don't just disagree with the lifestyle. You better celebrate it. You better celebrate it. Where is all of it going? Well, I don't think it's unclear where it's all going. Any speech that threatens what the culture demands you celebrate is not just hated now. It's on the fast track to being incriminated. That's where it's going. You should be able to see it. The wholesale assault on what we call biblical claims of Christianity is now with the goal of making that a crime. That's where the end goal of this. But even more specifically, is not just to make the biblical claims of Christianity a crime, but to make Jesus as the answer the crime. That's where it's going. To make Jesus as the answer the crime. That's the world. The question I started thinking about is, what kind of effect does that have as it is pushed on the church? We're so worried about the state of the world, but the real concern is, what is the church doing with these pressures? What has the church been doing with these pressures? The greatest pressure to stop the preaching of Jesus happened where? Jerusalem. Wow. The greatest pressure to stop the preaching of Jesus happened and started in the holy city. Have we caved? John Payne, who spoke at Westminster this week, he's a PCA pastor out in Charleston, and he did the Dindulk lectures, and he said something in one of the lectures that I, in light of preparing for this and thinking about, I couldn't get out of my head, that most preaching that is done in the church today looks nothing like what the apostles did. What do you think? You agree? The model is a man stands up, everything's focused on the temporary, nothing's heavenly. The model's so predictable now. It's so predictable. Nothing is confrontative. He's there for the chat. Really, it's law-driven, but it's sin light. Everything's about being uplifted. Everything's about you walking out feeling like you achieved just some happiness for your way and your week and being all that God desperately wants you to be. It's just so predictable in whatever form that comes. It's just predictable. People are not pressed into the kingdom this way. They're not being pressed into the kingdom this way. The only way people are pressed into the kingdom is to bring to bear the claims of Jesus as being the only way, truth, and life, by which people must confess that their lives are out of harmony with him, with God, and that they need a Savior, that they have to come that route to enjoy real freedom. You see? And we have a message that your own hopes are carnal, your own dreams, personal aspirations are sinful, that you have to turn from everything that you think is going to make you happy in this life and come to Jesus. For life. And he so graciously is willing. He loves. And the Bible has this message everywhere. It's all about him. It really is all about him. But when faced with these kind of pressures from the world, we want so much to fit in with it. We no longer bring a message that anyone can hate. We no longer bring a message that anyone can refuse. Who's going to get mad at a pastor telling us, as I saw this week, don't put your lives, the sermon title, on cruise control? It's nice and easy and harmless, and then we're sucked into the world on their terms. We're sucked into the world on their terms. Well, what happens? Out goes Jesus. You know, many mainline churches are done with the cross. Do you know the Western Baptist Convention in Cuba this week voted to remove all of the pastors who preach doctrines of grace? Did you know that? Now they're being persecuted. They're going to lose governmental recognition and could result in the confiscation of their property. Feel the pressure? You feel it? I think you see the importance of the passage then, because this is Stephen. This is Stephen. This is what Jesus told us would happen. What do we do in a message that'll never seem like it works? Preach Jesus? Well, I guess some would think it's a time to apologize. Oh, no, listen, you've misunderstood me. You've misunderstood me. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to speak against the law. I'm not doing that. What does he do? I think Jesus inspires us here when he said, I chose you out of the world, and this is the hatred I've promised you because they hate me. So what do? You preach him. This is what makes a difference. You say, how is this going to make a difference? Watch. There's been a lot of misunderstanding to exactly what Stephen does here in this particular message. And the reason people miss what he's doing is because they think he's giving a defense. This is not a defense. This is an offense. He is going on the offensive in an accusatory manner against them. That is his message. In complete boldness, with a carefully constructed accusation, he surveys redemptive history. Carefully constructed. And you'll see it. I'm not going through all this, but I just want you to see exactly what he's doing here. He walks them through four epochs of redemptive history. He walks them through Abraham, Joseph, Moses, and David. He broke down the whole Testament for you to answer their charges, but now to go on the counter and bring one against them. Remember the charges. You speak against the temple, which is equivalent to speaking against God. You speak against the law and therefore are disregarding the holy law of God. What does he do? Just feel the flow of it for a minute. Brothers and fathers, he said, listen, the God of glory appeared to our father Abraham when he was in Mesopotamia. Where? Where did he appear? Mesopotamia. It's already showing you the direction he's going to go here. God told him to go up to the land. Remember, go down to the land. But guess what? He didn't get any inheritance in it. Not even a foot. Actually, God sent his descendants out of there. And do you remember how long that was? 400 years. He is doing a sweeping picture here for them. 400 years, God said he would deliver them. And notice verse 7. After this, they will come out and worship me in this place. He didn't say the land in the wilderness. In this place, Sinai, not the temple. They worshiped in the wilderness. And then the covenant was made, remember, the covenant of circumcision. Then came Joseph. He was sold as a slave into Egypt. Six times Egypt keeps getting mentioned here. Egypt, 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 Egypt. But guess what? God was with him the whole way. There. And then God brought out Jacob's family out of the land and saved them where? In Egypt. I don't know if you feel starting to feel the offense of this sermon. Just wait. I think it'll come. By the way, he was raised by Pharaoh's daughter. And guess what? He didn't go to your schools. He was instructed in all the wisdom of the Egyptians and in all their literature. You see how in your face that was? You're tying God to a box. You stop it. God was not bound up that way like you have bound him up. You don't know your own history. You think he only works this way, as if God could be controlled by a temple and all your schools that you've set up. This would be like saying, listen, he didn't go to Calvin, he didn't go to Dort, he didn't go to any of our institutions. He came from Escondido High, and God was with him there. Feel the offense of that? That's the offense. That's his charge. See what you've done to God. When Moses fled to Midian, there an angel of the Lord appeared to him. And oh, you think worshiping God is only in that temple? God appeared to Moses in a burning bush, and guess what? That ground was holy wherever God was. And then there was David. He asked to build God a house, but I didn't even let him do that. Because you know what? I let Solomon do it because God cannot be boxed into a house and wanted no one ever to think that anyone could box him in that way. Heaven is my throne. Earth is my footstool. What sort of house are you going to build for me? I make all these things. You get the first point? Stephen, you're speaking against the temple. And that means you're blasting God, for that's where God is. You think God's boxed in? You don't know your history. You haven't listened to your history. Where God is, there the ground is holy. And guess what I'm now preaching? Jesus is the temple. All of it spoke of him. Where he is, there the ground is holy. Where he is, there the temple is. He is the temple.
Been listening to Abounding Grace Radio with Pastor Chris Gordon. Call us toll-free at 888-504-8805. Once again, 888-504-8805. Or contact us on the web at agradio.org. That's agradio.org. Connect with us on Facebook. Look for Abounding Grace Radio Ministry. Listen daily on this station or subscribe to the AG Radio podcast in iTunes or use our free Android app. Thanks for listening. And remember, where sin abounded, grace abounded more.